CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning. It's The Offspring with Why Don't You Get a Job, which is always the best advice in the world for people who are feeling a little bit left out of society. Get a job, you know, especially if it's hard for them. That's a really kind and thoughtful thing to say. No, we'll talk in a minute or two to somebody who's, I think, got a little bit of a softer touch on all of this, and we should probably pay attention. Her name is Neora Mafoko, and she's the founder of the Safe Space Facebook group. You know, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group have recently done a study that indicates that depression affects 1 in 4 South African employees. So those are people who do have a job.
Man.
That's around 4.5 million people, to be exact. People between the ages of 25 and 44 are most affected by depression. Let that sink in for a minute. It means that there's a good chance that the person who sits next to you at work has had to cope with depression at some point in their lives. Just think about that. So we'll speak to Neo and we'll find out about her Facebook page and what she's doing. She's actually hosting a talk. And maybe there's some way that this affects you, some way that it involves you, some way it gets into your life. Maybe it has some meaning and some impact. All right, one person who never gets depressed is Snoop Dogg, because he just smokes tons of weed and he's got a really successful life. I mean, he seems to be a good father. You remember that reality TV show they did?
Snoop Dogg's Big Fatherhood.
That's right. And he's produced tons and tons of great music. He seems like a happy guy. He does a lot of good work around the world. And he comments regularly about stuff that irritates him in social media. So Variety magazine were there when Snoop Dogg got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And this is what Snoop had to say. Take a listen.
At least I want to thank me. I want to thank me for believing in me. I want to thank me for doing all this hard work. I want to thank me for having no days off. I want to thank me for never quitting. I want to thank me for always being a giver and trying to give more than I receive. I want to thank me for trying to do more right than wrong. I want to thank me for just being me at all times. Snoop Dogg, you a bad motherfucker, girl.
That was his self-congratulatory speech at the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I love it.
Pretty cool. You can't lie.
You can't lie, right? He's good. He's good at this stuff.
I've lost a bit of love for Snoop recently.
Why is that, Gordo?
Not like I still... I mean, you got to love Snoop. I'm just saying there's levels of love, you know, for Snoop.
Is it when he broke records with his gospel album?
No, he just says a bunch of shit. Like, he's gotten involved now in commentating on MMA, and like, he does it when he's drunk and he gets facts wrong. And he was like so awful after Mayweather won in the boxing fight against Conor. Like, that was ever in doubt what was going to happen there. And like, he, when Darren Till, who's from Liverpool, won a fight, he went all like, because the other guy was from somewhere not of like English-speaking descent. He got all like, USA, USA, not realizing the guy was English. I don't know. And he's like, just seems a bit
sloppy.
He's sloppy, and he seems a little bit either too high or too drunk to be doing it, like, some of the time. Still, though, love Snoop. He rules overall.
All right. Well, Ben's found something that I think might be of interest to everybody, that young people are having less sex.
Yeah, you would think with the connectivity of everything, you'd be having more, but you know.
But they've got porn we could never have dreamt of before.
You think that's the reason, Gord?
Just saying it's a possibility.
What do you think the reason is, Sia? You think clearly
also they're just full of shit.
Just hold on a second. So, Ben, it is established fact that young people are having less sex.
Yes.
Okay. According to whom?
The world.
Oh.
Like, as in what's
the
happening.
The sex checkers people.
Having less sex or having less children?
No, well, here's the deal. In a culture that is becoming increasingly more tolerant, why is sexual intercourse on the decline? In the space of a generation, sex has gone from something most high school students have experienced to something most haven't. The average adult used to have sex 62 times a year. Now that number is 54.
So that's just more than once a week. But I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm not like, screw these dumb kids and they're not enough sex.
No, sure.
But at the same time, like, being sort of, like, what's the word? And I'm not saying going up to girls and being like, hey, sweetheart, why don't you come back to my place is okay. But, like, being forward and being communicative and being like confident and saying what you mean mm-hmm. and all the many different ways that I managed to, God knows how, but successfully get laid from time to time. Are kind of now you got to second guess that shit hard, you know. When are you allowed to approach somebody? When are you allowed to reciprocate their flirting with you? It's like the rules are officially, you're allowed to flirt with a girl if she wants you to flirt with her, and then
but if you're really good looking, you can get away with it.
If you're really good looking, you're fine, but you're only allowed to flirt with a girl if you know she wants you to flirt with her. And like part of the process of flirting with a girl is to find out if she wants you to flirt with her.
Correct.
So these poor kids are a little bit fucked. Well, they're a little bit not fucked as a result of all of this.
Yeah. Hey, listen to this quickly.
Just a guess.
This is from The Atlantic. All right, listen.
These should be boom times for sex. Our culture has never been more tolerant of sex in just about every permutation. Shameful terms like perversion have given way to cheerful ones like kink. Polyamory is now a household word. And you can use apps to arrange for casual sex within an hour. But despite it all, young people are not having more sex. They're having less.
They're calling it the sex recession.
Could just be because young people are full of shit.
Hold on, God. What?
Sorry, I didn't realize it was more. It could just be because young people are full of shit in general. I mean, look at the terrible rap music they empower. Look at the shitty clothing they wear, their crap attitude towards work, stupid words they say like lit, on fleek, and skid it.
Oh.
And like the fact that they communicate in emojis and can't use an apostrophe.
These are probably all valid
treat
points.
Treat an apostrophe like it's a space rocket, like it's that hard to operate. Like, fuck. Come on, kids. I was a kid once. I don't remember being totally fucking useless.
Hang on a second.
The average adult has gone from having sex 62 times a year to 54 times. In the 90s, the percent of high school students who reported dating began to drop. More people than ever seem to be sitting on the sidelines, romantically speaking. Some experts say this may be because people are spending less time in couples. At the same time, the share of American men who reported masturbating in a given week doubled, while women more than tripled.
It's the
easy
porn.
Easy access to porn is part of this story, of course.
There we go.
Some people say that the internet has made it so easy to gratify basic social and sexual needs that there's far less incentive to go out into the real world to satiate these desires. One study found that the arrival of broadband internet access to U.S. counties explained between 7 and 13% of the teen birth rate decline. Our increasing social media use goes hand in hand with rising rates of anxiety and depression, which also happen to inhibit sexual impulses. Other critics blame online dating for relocating the romantic landscape.
Let's just hold the thought on that online dating thing. That's an important point, right? That social media, while it has all this connectivity and it provides us with all this access to each other, it also provides us with a lot more disappointment.
Sure.
And expectation. The expectation is so high. You see other people. They look so good. They're having such a good life. They're going on holiday the whole time. They're tanned. They're beautiful.
I've had that my whole life, and I still bone. Like, I'm boning for the first team. I think the porn thing kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
In that need can be – like, that need to just empty the sluice gates can be, like, almost from a – like, almost just from a – process, like a functional perspective, you gotta let the demons out, right? That's easier to accomplish and kind of less shameful and easier to like kind of deal with. Although some of that shit, I will agree, is like scarring to the psyche. You know, you get the one where you finish up and you're like, I'm not even into that. I need to go talk to someone I can trust about my feelings. But, I also just think it's like a bit of uselessness.
Well, it could be. I mean, I think there is a correlation there. And when you are depressed and you're anxious and you're not feeling great and the confidence starts to take a knock, and then obviously you become more sexually inhibited. That's just a natural
But when you're not going out, you're not socially adjusting yourself. Like, everyone can say hello. Everyone can go to work and talk corporate, but everyone can seduce or mesmerize someone socially with their charm, all that kind of stuff. Take that away, then a whole lot less sex will happen.
But there's but that's always been the case. Some people have that and some people don't.
But I think less people nowadays even know how to go about that or want that.
And I'll agree with that.
So it's all about internet dating. It's like, well, if I could just go there, then hopefully I can get sex, which is the most biggest turnoff ever, sitting across from somebody and they just want to be polite until they get to the sex part.
Yeah, and it's also something that like I've dealt with like not, I don't do like online dating websites and stuff, but when you get flirty with someone online and it's like clearly getting very flirty and then it goes into DMs and now it's like very suggestive and there's clearly like either talking about or referencing sex. My thing is like, I do not want to continue having this conversation. Like, if you want to meet up at some point and everyone's single at the time and it's appropriate to do so, let's do it and do it soon. I don't want to talk to you about the kind of sex we might have for 3 weeks. Yeah. And by then the expectation is so high that you don't want to do it and somebody gets cold feet, or you've built yourself up bigger than the truth and you know about that, or you sit together and it's like, oh shit, I don't actually know who this person is and there's something about your eyebrow that freaks me out and I like just desperately want to get out of here. I'm like, flirt with me for 2 days, go on a date with me within the next 2 days, or thanks, it's nice to meet you. If one day we run into each other, maybe we pick up this conversation.
I'm with you.
Go real world ASAP.
ASAP. Spot on.
But just in closing about that.
No, hang on, Gord. Sorry, don't interrupt me now.
I didn't know you were doing a thing. I apologize. I apologize.
Other critics blame online dating for relocating the romantic landscape. Over a very short period of time, it's become less acceptable to strike up a conversation in real life without seeming inappropriate or creepy.
That's what Ben said.
According to one poll, 17% of young Americans now believe that a man inviting a woman out for a drink constitutes sexual harassment. Romantic pursuit is being cordoned off into a prearranged online space that for many people does more to suck up time than create successful matches, leaving them confused and overwhelmed. Another reason for the decline in sex might be people feeling empowered to say, no thanks. In 2012, 30% of women said they experienced pain the last time they had vaginal sex.
Wow, so some people just saying no and feeling empowered enough to say no.
Also that.
Yeah.
That is good. I mean, obviously, but I mean, I also know a lot of women that have these problems, like that also like want to get laid, but feel a bit like I'm not really sure how, and I struggle with my confidence. And you like, look, I know you. You're a wonderful person. You're very attractive. Not blowing smoke up your ass or cocaine, but like you're fine. You need to get over your own personal issues. I've even got like, I've got quite a few lesbian friends. Like, I've just got friends from all over the spectrum. It's not like I roll with the lesbians specifically, but I got a significant group of lesbian friends and I've like helped one who has real problems talking to girls. And she says to me, like, I can see you don't. And like, she's prettier than me. There's no doubt. She's not an unattractive human. And I kind of just like, without being an expert, being any kind of Casanova, I kind of just kind of took her through it. Like, you've got to approach in a way that's polite, that's not belittling, that lets the other person easily and comfortably decline you. So something like, hey, listen, don't mean to be rude. I've been seeing you from across the bar. I think you look really pretty, and maybe I'm completely out of line here, but I'm over there with my friends. And if at any point you want to come chat and like meet us, that would be really cool. So like, we're over there, and take it or leave it, but just want to introduce myself. I'm Gord. Cool. Bye.
No.
And then that person has the opportunity to go, okay, cool, maybe I'll come just now or not.
Yeah, because people have real trouble saying no.
And don't be like, I noticed your tits, so do you want to come get a drink? And don't try to buy someone drinks now they owe you. So that's the thing. Like, introduce politely, offer the opportunity to come and socialize further if you want. You don't even have to say no at the time. It's like, you can come join us if you want later. That's it.
Very nice.
Treating people like you would like to be treated, there's always that.
No, I can't do that. I'll get arrested in the bar immediately.
Well, Ben, I think your attitude is the right one. Treat people like you'd like to be treated.
Unless you're into weird shit, and then don't think everyone else is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's like, I would like to be treated in ways that is not right to do it to a stranger in a bar.
Well, on this matter, I mean, we were just talking about how, you know, there's social media pressures and people feel anxiety all the time and people feel depressed. Well, the statistics are staggering. 4.5 million people in South Africa, according to SADAG, that's the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, are affected by depression. And that means that there is a good chance the person you sit right next to at work has had to cope with depression at some point in their lives. Now, it's obvious that mental illness is something we all should be paying more attention to. We talk about it quite a lot in this show. I think it's massively important.
Yeah.
To help us do that this morning is Neo Ramafoko, who is the founder of the Safe Space Facebook group and someone who is making steady progress in raising the awareness we need around mental illness. I actually met Neo years ago. You remember Neo? I remember.
That's awesome.
We met at a Heritage Day braai.
Wow, you've got a good memory.
Yeah. And you won some prize, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. So tell me how you got involved in things like depression. And how you got involved in, first of all, hosting this talk on Friday at the Metropolis and Park Avenue in Sandton, and why you started this Facebook group.
I got involved in depression because I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. Well, not now, but I'm living with a mental illness.
When did you discover that? Because some people live their lives and they don't know.
It also started, I think I actually have been depressed since I was a child. Because I was even looking at my pictures when I was a baby. There's just one picture where I was smiling. Just one. And every other picture, I'm so miserable. And it kind of like right now, later in the years, I just remembered that I had pain within. Like, I don't know how to describe it.
A heaviness. And
yes. You know, you can't explain it. You've got people around you. You are a child. You want to play with them. But you feel that. Even at school. I mean, I was an A student.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just painful. It was just, yeah, that misery and that heaviness, and even the pain was short. I mean, the happiness was short lived. If I ever was happy, so it carried on through the years. And I went to a doctor. I can't remember what year it was. I think it must have been in 2010 or something like that. To try and get to see what is wrong with me, basically. And because of the stigma attached to mental illness, especially amongst black folk, you are bewitched, you're crazy. I didn't want to accept it. You know, yeah. I didn't want to take medication, et cetera, et cetera. And then fast forward to last year, my cousin brother killed his girlfriend and committed suicide. He was severely depressed and he said nothing. And then WHP. And it was after, you know, I spoke 4 days to my friends about starting this thing because I've had this urge to do something like this because, like I say, among black folk, mental illness is totally misunderstood. Mm-hmm. People don't get onto treatment because you're bewitched, you're crazy, etc.
But they're also, sometimes they're not even aware that they are depressed.
Absolutely.
And worse than that, if they do find out they're depressed, they keep it secret and they try to deal with
Absolutely.
It on their own.
Absolutely. Any mental illness, bipolar, schizophrenia, multiple personalities, any other mental illness, you are too scared to take medication. I remember I went to treatment at the Joburg Gen, and I have a friend of mine who works there, and I would make sure that she doesn't see that I'm walking towards the mental illness clinic. And even at public institutions, you get treated like dirt. You get called all sorts of names, and yeah, you crazy beings.
Well, a lot of people say it's a white people's disease,
oh,
right?
Yes. Oh, yes. They say that, and that's the myth. And that's why I wanted to start this. And like I said, 4 days before, I had said to my friends, and little did I know that 4 days later, then WHP would take his own life. And that's when I said, you know what, I'm going to do something about it.
So then you started the Facebook page.
I did.
And you talk about all kinds of mental illness issues.
I did.
And you try to help where you can.
Yeah.
And how's that going? How many people have joined?
The likes are over 100 now, and it's been like, what, 2-3 weeks? I'm not sure.
That's pretty quick growth.
But I have also opened my personal Facebook page to say you can inbox me, and I have been inundated. It's scary that so many people are depressed, but it's also good that people are now speaking up.
And that they want to do something about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yes.
So the Facebook page is called Safe Space, and you get to join up. It emphasizes the name, it's emphasized that when you want to come in there, you could talk about your mental illness. No judgment. No one's going to say, oh, you're crazy or you're bewitched or any of these things.
Sure.
You can go in there and have an honest conversation with other people about their experiences and hopefully find out whether there's a way to chart a course through yours.
Sure.
And since you're not a psychiatrist, you can only really talk about your experiences, your journey, what you've gone through.
Yeah.
But you do have a psychiatrist.
I do. I do, because I can only offer a word of advice. I can only share my story. I can only tell what can be done from a personal perspective, but I can't diagnose you. So when you can tell that a person says, I suspect that I may be suffering with this, obviously they need to be referred. Unless if somebody says to you, I'm depressed, I'm living with schizophrenia, bipolar, multiple, then yeah, then that's the advice they can offer.
It kind of sounds to me like it serves the similar purpose to like a combination of a support group and one of those old depression / suicide hotlines where you can just call and talk to someone, only way more accessible in the social space. So it's such a good idea.
Thank you so much.
Taking the best of a few good concepts. And then also you could refer people to good psychiatrists.
Absolutely.
Because I'm also quite open about the fact that I have some mental health issues and I'm always willing to discuss it with people. And people go, oh, obviously, because of the stupid jokes I make and the crazy shit that I say on air, and that's got nothing to do with it.
Absolutely. Like,
that's just my sense of humor.
That's also the challenge. I mean, people look at my Facebook posts and they judge me on that, you know. I've lost friends because of that, and every time I say anything, because I'm a very humorous person and I'm outgoing and I speak about anything, and I'm quite intelligent.
Do people have a problem with that?
Yes. No. Oh, absolutely. Oh yeah, you have people inboxing.
And that's something
you've got
to stop. We got to work together on letting people. It's just a thing. It's like if someone's like, "Hey, I'm having a bad week with my diabetes this week," you don't go like, "Oh,
yes, true.
What's wrong with you?"
Yes,
you just go, "Okay, well, I hope you feel better."
I always use the example of a cold. If someone gets a cold or if someone has flu, we don't go, "Oh my God, go over there and stay away from the rest of us," and we cannot talk about. And then we whisper to each other, "Have you heard that Ben has got flu?"
Yeah.
Like there's something terribly wrong with him forever. And there are ways to deal with some of these diseases through medication, through therapy, through psychoanalysis if you need to go through that.
Yeah.
Then you can figure out how to live life at 100% rather than at 50%,
right?
Absolutely. And there's medication and stuff that can help you. Sometimes it's a difficult process of trying out what works for you and doesn't give you bad side effects.
Yeah.
But I sought help in 2013. Having never been like completely dysfunctional, I was never like unable to cope with my life, but I always had this feeling that like I was either very angry or very kind of like overly cheerful for no good reason.
Yeah.
So it's great to be in a great mood, but if you can't put your finger on why, or if you're pissed off and you can't put your finger on why, I found a medication that's just doesn't take away my personality. I still get irritated. I still get cheerful, but it just doesn't go off the spectrum of what makes sense as a response.
Yeah.
Now, what about you? Are you on some kind of medication?
Oh, yes, I am. Oh, yes. And it's a lifetime medication and I have to stay on it. And that's another thing that people living with mental illnesses make.
Yeah.
As soon as you feel better, you stop taking your meds. And that's not how you do it. I've done it and I've gone bad. Really bad.
It's a brain chemistry thing.
It's precisely.
And the thing with that is that it comes from that same stigma that people think, shit, I shouldn't be on this, but I kind of have to be.
Yeah.
Like I'm conceding.
Yes.
Like I'm taking it despite the fact that I really wish I wasn't and I don't want to be taking it. I wish I wasn't taking it and people will judge me for taking it. So I'll take it, but as soon as I can get off it, the better.
Yeah.
This is not like curing like TB.
Yeah.
You don't do your year-long course and then you're fine. And that's another thing that people need to understand. Like, I would not want to stop my meds. I take them every day. I feel fine. And if I ran out, I'd be very concerned.
Yeah.
Don't think I'd go completely like uncontrollable, but I would definitely notice the difference.
Yeah. And you have to check in with your psychiatrist quite regularly.
At least once a year. Yeah. And that's when things are going well.
But only when, when I'm under pressure also. I mean, sometimes I make a big deal out of things, but I make sure these days that, you know, I don't go off the rails. I've been under a lot of pressure planning this function on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I checked in with my psychiatrist and just to make sure that I stay on track, because at the end of the day, it's my own personal health.
So now when you think about the fact, and I read that statistic that about 1 in 4 South African employees, that's people who are in the workforce, 1 in 4 are either depressed or suffer from some kind of
mental
illness. That's a harrowing figure. That means that when we get to work in the morning, we're not just dealing with people who we think might be like us, and that's if you assume that you're one of the four that isn't suffering from this.
Yeah.
You don't know what people are going through.
Absolutely.
This is why people snap at each other. This is why we have conflict in the workplace. This is why we have people crying and running off to the bathrooms. People don't often realize that it's not circumstantial sometimes. It's an actual medical condition.
Sure. And I said the other day on both my personal Facebook page and the Safe Space Facebook pages that I think in terms of labor law even, and in terms of the workplace, you know, it doesn't really make provision for people living with mental illnesses. Because it states that, let's say you're working and you're battling a mental illness, you're suffering from a mental illness, you forget the safe open, somebody steals money, you get disciplined, okay? But it says that before a sanction can be issued, provided you have disclosed your mental illness, then they can look at the facts. And I kind of like, I don't think it's fair that, I mean, for an array of reasons, you don't want to disclose, you know, because of the stigma, you're scared that probably the HR manager knows you or knows your friend or something like that. And they've got access to that information.
But what we've really got to do is get rid of the stigma.
That's what I'm trying to do.
That's why I'm so pleased to talk to you this morning, because what you're doing is instructive. This is going to make huge strides in the right direction for some people.
Yeah.
Just tell me, you know, the other thing that people have a misconception about is that mental illness only happens to poor people or people under stress and pressure. There are very, very well-connected, well-adjusted family members who provide for their kids and try to live a good life, but they still suffer from depression and mental illness.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do, in fact, with their circumstances.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And I also said on the page, you are not your mental illness, because it then speaks to, look, anybody can suffer from a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your fault. You didn't ask for it. You must just cope with it better. And there is help out there.
And that's such an important point. I mean, again, I'm not an expert. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I have a really good one. And I see a psychologist occasionally, and things are very much under control in that regard. But I'm not aware of, although I stand to be corrected, any way that you could give yourself a mental illness. And people also need to understand there's a disconnect in cause and effect. For me, part of the definition, my layman's definition of depression, is a deep and noticeable sadness that affects your ability to live your life happily and effectively that doesn't have an obvious cause. You know, if God forbid someone you love dies, you're going to be really sad for a period of time until you deal with it. If you lose your job, if you get cheated on by a partner, you're going to be really, really sad. That's normal. That's life. You can't go anytime I'm just not happy. I have depression.
Yeah.
It's when it's regular, and there's there's, say some bad thing does happen, but your response to it is way disproportionate.
Yeah.
Or you're sad and you have no idea why.
Yeah.
That then leads to depression about why am I sad when there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So it's like a vicious circle. Yeah. So you can't make yourself have depression, as far as I know.
Yeah.
No, you can't. And you also can't cure yourself. So this is something people have to realize. You can't say to someone who's depressed, and it took me a long time to work this out, to now snap out of it.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you just wake up on the right side of the bed?
It's like, hey, so you're drowning. Why don't you just try? Have you tried not drowning? Have you tried not being drowning? See how that goes for you.
Why don't you just go to a party? Why don't you spend time with your friends? And it doesn't work like that.
No.
You don't just snap out of it. Yeah.
Well, I'm very, very impressed with what you're doing here. Neo Ramafoko is the founder of the Safe Space Facebook group. Go and join her group if you want to join in the conversation. And I think this is the kind of thing that could grow.
No, it will.
It will attract, you know, the right people from an expert point of view to help. It'll attract people who desperately need someone to talk to. I think it's very brave of you to do this, and congratulations to you.
Thank you so much, Karen.
It really is terrific.
It's good to see you.
All the best. So there we go. Neo's hope is that people will come and join, that help is available, help for sufferers, for families, and for friends of sufferers, so that as well as being a sufferer, you have ample support from people who are and are not on the outside. It's a very, very good idea. I think that's terrific.
What a brilliant thing. And so it was, it's Facebook Safe Space Group.
Yeah.
Safe Space Group.
Yeah.
I'm going to share the shit out of that.
Thank you, Gord.
Because that's important stuff.
Thank you.
So again, like a good analogy is it's a support group meets a help hotline on a social media platform.
Absolutely.
A really, really good thing.
Well, the other day we spoke to Leon Fassveld. He came in here from South Africa. He's actually talking to us now live from the West Coast of the United States of America. And He is one of the specialists from the American Dream. They're an authority in EB5 investments. Do you remember we asked him about more information and options that you can explore and consider? There are lots of people who want to move to other parts of the world, and I think that that's entirely within your right and probably a good idea if you want to put your money in different places and not have all your eggs in one basket. If you want to chase the American dream, then listen up. We've got Leon on the line now. Hey, Leon, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Gareth. How are you? Thanks good. For having me back.
Good. What a pleasure. It's nice to talk to you. The last time we spoke to you, we talked about some very general things around the EB5 investments and what kind of investment you would have to make in order to get your green card in the US. People are very interested in this. I wanted to cover today some general options about immigrating to the US. What are the first steps someone needs to take if they want to make a move?
Look, Garrett, you know, the EB5 investment that we talked about last time around, you know, involved $500,000 investment into the United States, and what's that? It translates into roughly, depending on what the market does in South Africa, about 7.5 million rand. It's quite a big chunk of change, but you know, generally there are some other options to immigrate to the United States as well, which, you know, I typically dumb down into three basic options in order to, you know, make it too overcomplicated.
Yeah.
Those are through a family member into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So either a U.S. citizen family member or someone who's a permanent resident that can sponsor you. Those are permanent green cards, and they typically tend to take quite a while, but at least, you know, that's a step in the right direction and some option.
Right.
The second option is obviously through a U.S. employer. So if you have a U.S. employer in the United States is willing to give you a job, there's some challenges surrounding that we can perhaps discuss. Or you could instead, if you don't have a U.S. employer, maybe create, you know, your own company in the United States as a South African and open up a branch of your company. And under the L visa transfer, yourself as the managing director or, you know, some of your managing team over to the United States to start a branch or subsidiary of your company over there. That's a very popular visa that we do quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And then some South Africans that we meet also qualify for an E visa, which is a temporary investment visa where some of their spouses, are from different countries. So there are certain countries that has a treaty with the United States, like Germany and the United Kingdom and places like that, Australia, that actually opens up some other alternative visa options, you know, temporary visa options for folks from those countries. So if your spouse perhaps has a different citizenship, then, you know, we can also kind of utilize that one. And then last but not least, you know, through the employment, you also get the ability to do this through the investment. And that's what we talked about last time. And this is where you invest $500,000 into an approved immigration project. You invest this money in, like we said last time, this is not where you go buy your green card. You invest this $500,000, you go through mm-hmm. a process wherein you, your spouse, and your kids under 21 all get green cards as a result thereof. This investment has to show it's creating 10 jobs in the United States. So, you know, current administration is very, very keen to have people process through this, obviously for obvious reasons. And it's also been a very, very popular investment opportunity for South Africans to hedge their rand against the dollar, against all the uncertainty that's going on in South Africa. But more importantly, obviously also utilize this as a vehicle to go into the United States.
I think that's a very well laid out range of options for people. What I'd like to ask you is a couple of very specific questions. So people often want to know if there's an ideal age or if age discrimination forms part of the various list of reasons that people might say they can or can't get into a country like the United States. Age, education, medical conditions, how about those?
You know, Gareth, we get that quite often, and it translates, you know, those questions typically translates from other options that are available for people to immigrate to other parts of the world. But United States do not discriminate against how old you are, if you have a prior medical condition. And as far as education is concerned, obviously there are certain visas where an education plays a role, but in general terms, education don't even play a role. But let me just quickly get back to the education part thereof, because it brings me back to one of the non-immigrant work visas that are available. You know, oftentimes people, would get employment in the United States, and there's a very popular visa called, the H-1B visa. that people will then apply for, because this is a specialty occupation visa that allows for a U.S. employer to hire someone who has a bachelor's degree for a position in the United States that require a bachelor's degree.
Right.
You know, the issue with those visas is there's only 65,000 of these visas available, and every fiscal year, which runs from October till October, there's over 200,000 people applying. I mean, you know, the likes of Google and Facebook and these folks who rely upon getting top-notch engineers from all over the world in order to help them grow has had, you know, a great outcry to Congress to increase that number. And so it really also then kind of limits your options as far as non-immigrant working visas are already limited. But, you know, when it comes to it being limited in visa numbers too, it also creates an issue. But as far as education is concerned, you know, some of the investment folks that we help say, hey, look, Leon, you know, I'm a very good entrepreneur, but, you know, I didn't go to school for all of that. Is that going to be an issue?
Mm-hmm.
Age doesn't matter. Education doesn't matter for purposes of investment. Obviously, the investment is just solely focused on where the source of that money came from, and also prior medical conditions. In fact, you know, Gareth, folks are actually, we've had, in fact, someone who were undergoing some significant treatment, a cancer treatment.
Yeah.
And through this EG5 investment, they were actually able to go to the United States to permanently stay there and get the top and the best medical treatment for themselves in the United States.
That's very, very interesting. So in other words, none of those things are necessarily going to hinder your progress, especially if you go with this investment route. Now, how about federal laws? I mean, your lawyer needs to be able to practice in any of those states. What if you want to move to, let's say, Mississippi, or if I want to go to Oklahoma, or I want to go to Arizona? Is that complicated by the fact that the lawyer might not be conversant in the laws of that particular state?
No, you know, and we get that asked that question also quite often. You know, because the immigration laws are fairly regulated, it really doesn't matter where your lawyer is licensed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether or not you guys from Mississippi and you decide to go live in California, you know, all of these applications are in fact centralized and filed in a centralized location and viewed under federal law. So we represent a variety of people, not only from various different states in the United States, despite the fact that we're right in the middle, and me calling you from California. But the long and the short of it is we represent a variety of people from all over. Most of those people we've never even met. And more importantly, we meet and represent quite a lot of individuals and companies from all over the world. And because the laws are federally regulated, unlike in other areas of law, it really doesn't matter where your lawyer is from or license that.
Do you have to get a work visa first, or can you get a green card straight away through a U.S. employer?
You know, that's a very good question. Coming to one of our three options of coming to the United States, we get asked that question quite often, or there's a perception that you need to first have an employer sponsor you for a work visa.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have a work visa, then the employer will then, you know, start a green card process. Logistically, it's typically how things work, only from the employment point of view, because the employer would like to check you out first, you know, get you a visa, come and work there for a couple of times. And some of those visas, depending on which one you have obviously a limited lifespan. So, you know, either after an accumulative of 5 or 6 years, you'll be done, or 3 years, and then you need to go back to South Africa or switch over, or having had a green card. But because of the complexities with regards to the availability of work visas, you know, we have started green card applications for folks who are still in South Africa. So they say, hey, Leon, I got a guy in Kansas who wants to employ me. And we start, you know, talking about the various different work non-immigrant working visas, and we'll take as a, for instance, the H-1B. If we were to assume that we were the guy qualifies for an H-1B visa where he has a bachelor's degree coming over here to work in a position requiring a bachelor's degree,
mm-hmm.
that we'll get this application filed. But because of the fact that there's only a limited amount of visas available, we're going to enter ourselves into somewhat of a lottery with 200,000 other applicants, and ultimately end up waiting maybe another, you know, 12 to 18 months before, you know, we know whether or not we were able to get that visa. Well, instead of doing that, you know, most employers, because the unemployment rate is so low over here, they are in desperate need of good people, will start a green card process. Some of those green card processes could take up to 18 months. And by that time, you know, if we were to do run these two paths concurrent with one another, mm-hmm. one for sure is not going to enter into a lottery system, and that is the green card option. It unfortunately takes a while. You know, we need to deal with the Department of Labor under those conditions and show we can't find a U.S. citizen who's willing, able, and qualified to do the job and navigate through all of those hoops in order to ultimately get the guy over here. But this, Gareth, is also a very popular process that we are pursuing with a whole lot of farmers. So farmers are in desperate need of South Africans to come and work on their farms because, you know, the lazy millennial kid today, you know, doesn't necessarily want to go hay bales or, you know, go milk the cow five o'clock in the morning.
Oh, and so and a lot Donald of South Trump, Africans and have, Donald Trump doesn't want Mexicans; he wants South Africans. So that could be a good
that's
thing.
That's right. Hardworking South Africans. And so, you know, there's a lot of South Africa. So a lot of farmers here in the United States that just love the South Africans coming over on the agricultural visa, and then from there, you know, we'll switch them over onto this green card process.
All right. One last thing I need to know. General work visas, are those available to South Africans? Like, let's say you're just a varsity student, or maybe you've just finished matric and you want to go over to the US and work. Are those easy to get?
They are not. You know, there's unfortunately a misconception that I get people ask me quite often, you know, I just need some kind of a work visa or some kind of a card. And there are certain programs out there. Another J visa programs that will allow, you know, student to come on over as an exchange student. But very limited options. You know, these are something to be explored with the State Department. But it's not as popular as, like, for instance, the gap years you can do in England or in Europe or so on and so forth.
And finally, scams. I mean, there must be loads and loads of people out there who are trying to scam you out of your money. They tell you, oh, if you just transfer your 7 million rand, which is, as you said earlier, a large chunk of change, into this account, then you get your green card. People get very nervous, and they rightly should. I mean, there are probably a lot of scammers out there.
There are. In fact, Gareth, when I visited with you guys there last week, that previous Sunday's report had a couple of dubious South Africans, a mom and her daughter, and I think some of her family, who were convincing some of our fellow desperate South Africans to come to the United States just on a tourist visa, and they will take care of the rest, you know, put them in touch with an immigration lawyer and find them a job and, you know, get them a green card. And a lot of these desperate South Africans would pay whatever money, maybe not 7 million, and try to find some shortcuts in order to come over here. These folks are currently not, the investigation with the FBI is done. They've been indicted here in the United States and, facing some significant federal charges here in the United States. And what I often tell my fellow South Africans, like, look, most of the lawyers, including myself, offer a free consultation. It's a free telephone consultation where at least, if nothing else, I can identify for you, you know, which one of these options that we've talked about this morning is at least an option. You know, maybe there is no option, but I'm going to tell you up front, you know, whether or not you have an option and what those options are, and, you know, whether or not there's a great likelihood of success in one of those options. Yeah. But if there is no options, then it doesn't help you to go spend some money to go find some guy who's not licensed as an attorney in the United States. There is no real agency in the United States, mm-hmm. Immigration agents like Australia has, right, where you can, you know, go lean upon other fellow South African that says, you know, they've gone through the system before. We get that all the time. You know, well, my buddy went through the system. He knows how to fill out the forms, and, you know, he can get me over there. You know, I just pay him $20,000 or whatever the case may be. I sell my car and my house and whatever the case may be and come on over. So there's been some South Africans that's been scanned by this. There's some folks, some good resources out on Facebook, South Africans on Facebook, coming to the United States, that it's also warned quite a lot of our fellow citizens from about these scammers. And it's also just, I think, important as we talk about these scammers, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And having said that, I think it's also maybe important that when you consider coming to the United States, to maybe just interview a couple of lawyers. You know, not all lawyers are the same. And I think, you know, it's maybe just behooves yourself, if there is a free consultation out there, to coordinate a free consultation with a lawyer in the United States and go over some options. You'll find that there's quite a few similarities in some of the options that may be discussed. And, you know, one lawyer obviously may be a little bit more creative than the other. But I think at the end of the day, you can find that there's some kind of a gold thread running through those, and, you know, just kind of weigh up, you know, the best options of coming to the United States.
Well, thank you. I know we spoke to you guys the other day, but I thought there were a couple of questions we needed to just address in the wake of that discussion, because there were plenty of people who were interested. And I hope that you'll be able to smooth their path if they are intentional, if they have the intent of going over to the United States and making a new life for themselves. Thanks so much for speaking to us. Leon Fashfelt, everybody. You can find out more by going to cliffcentral.com. And they are the specialists called the American Dream. They're specialists in EB-5 investments, and you heard everything, I think, that we needed to find out there. Just a couple of minutes left of this morning before we clear out. Gord Laws is here, and there are a couple of messages that we have received from people who want to address Gord. Also, Ben and Sia and Nolo are still around, and we'll take your call if you want to squeeze one in before the end of the show. First of all, Michelle, Gord, I agree with you about the messages and it having to end. It doesn't get to dealing the deal. It's very hard to meet people in real life other than in an app. Sex is easy. It's getting a connection and developing into more that is difficult. We were talking about relationships earlier. Ben found this interesting article in The Atlantic about how people are having less sex, not more, than they did 20 years ago. So what do you think of that?
Yeah. And again, like for me, it's not also so much about the connection, because sometimes you are just after the sex. But it's that like ongoing social media context in which you're doing the meeting and doing the getting to know each other, where everything's a little polished, everything's a little considered, and either you do it for so long that then you get cold feet because the expectations have been built so high, or if it's not going to match the vibe online when you get into real life, rather know that sooner.
Yep.
So I agree with the thing about you looking for a connection. Although I do think you can also find that online, and then in real life, it's not what you hoped for. The same with the sexual attraction. You can think, oh, this is going to be fire.
Oh, it's going to be great.
And then you meet them and you're like, eh.
Yeah.
You do a thing
absolutely
that I don't like.
That's happened.
Every picture you've ever had on social media was like the best picture that's ever been taken.
And then you meet
the
person in real life and you think, Jesus.
I've had friends of mine who are like, have like a bit of a feminist bent and whatever, who are like, we don't get done up. We don't do makeup and get dressed up for you men. Because men are like, it's a lie when you look different than you really look. And the feminists are like, well, we don't do it for you. We do it for ourselves and blah, blah, blah. And I agree with everyone's point of view there. But like, it is a little bit deceptive, not necessarily women deceiving men or blah, blah, blah. It's just a little bit deceptive in general, to portray yourself in social media only in photos where you look much better than you actually look. Like, I'm not above deleting a picture where I've got like my eyes closed, my mouth open because I'm in the middle of a word, all of my chins are visible at once. But I also don't deliberately like seek to filter out pictures where I don't look my best. And I also will take my selfies from a bit of a flattering angle, but that's what I fucking look like. Like, you get a pretty good, you might see me in real life and be like, he's a little bit fatter than I even thought. But you're going to be like, oh, there's Gord, the oak from the internet. I can recognize you. Sometimes you look like someone did a painting of someone else and it had a passing resemblance to you and you posted it online. Also, with that moron-y shit of holding your lip or holding your cheek in every picture you take.
Yeah.
Like, I just hate you. You might look nice, but I hate you.
Here is something from Clint. Clint from the Val, who says, what a tune. Welcome back, Gord. Gareth, how's your gunt coming along? I've had a lot of people asking about my gunt in the last couple of weeks.
Clint definitely is coming along every time he enters a room. There it is. Boom.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you, I've been going to gym, and I've been working very hard at that in the last couple of weeks. I'm also not eating as much shit as I usually would.
Nice.
So hopefully
so we'll... like gunt-free November.
Gunt-free, let's say December. I've still got a couple of days of November to use up, and then hopefully
please
we'll be
please tell gunt-free. Me about gunt.
What's that? It's the thing that hangs over.
All right.
It's usually.
But why? It's your gut. But then why is it gunt?
Well, because.
Well, use
it's a pejorative term. for particularly women who have that, you know, they have like a belly that hangs slightly
up. Yeah, like a groin there. Belly.
So I'm using it as a pejorative self.
Cosmopolitan magazine's going to write about this now.
If you didn't go out and...
Come on, bring it on, Cosmo.
And I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. Never mind, I was going to go somewhere dark with that. Oh. But, dude, if I hadn't seen you in real life go out in the day, I'd be convinced you're a vampire because you don't really age. You always look the same. Your hair is Lego hair and you don't age or change weight.
Gareth, so please, you just nodded
I hate
to that.
It when yeah. people who are yeah. not in any way having a physique problem complain about their physique.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right.
If I was more agile, I'd jump over the table
up,
and
right.
fight you.
So here, Clint
But Clint
it
from
up.
The Vol's a legend, but can you please stop abusing me on social media now, damn it?
I think this morning was proof enough that you're alive, you're kicking, you're well.
Or it could become some big conspiracy like the Ultimate Warrior in the 80s and 90s where he disappeared for a while from wrestling and then came back and people were like convinced it was a different guy.
I love when people get drunk and someone says something like, yeah, you don't look like you've aged a lot. And I go, well, you know, 400 years ago when I took the heart out of a... virgin vampire.
Yeah, where Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt had a sex orgy biting you exactly. under the full moon.
I what? Survived it, yeah. You never watched Interview with the Vampire?
No.
Okay, he was going to look at it.
Good-ass movie. Attractive men and also a good story.
Go on, Sia. No. You know you want to.
You know some of these old classic movies that I've tried to watch just really don't hold up? In this day and age,
you don't know. You've never seen this one. Go take
this
our
one.
Advice.
Probably will because it's a period piece. So like it's set in back in the day. So
it's set in New Orleans in like the 1700s.
Yeah, there's well, no,
like,
what's that? No choreographed dance though.
Oh, and I was literally going to bring up Grease. I was going to bring up the Tom Cruise dancing in white underwear movie. All
That's
of them
risky
didn't.
Business.
Yes, that one. Yeah,
those haven't. I think those are also like time capsules. I love them. I don't mind if they've aged badly.
Yeah, to me, as an actual movie, like you try watch anything with Dustin Hoffman. It's like he was Rain Man. He wasn't acting in Rain Man. That's actually who he is.
Mm.
He's like a slow adult in really bad movies.
Oh. Yeah. But I agree with you. I've always found like I don't really get it with him. Like he's
never got it.
Yeah.
Apparently he had a giant wang though. Like real
Where do
monster
you hear
cock.
This from?
Well, he's got that big dick energy.
See, stop pretending these aren't the conversations that you have every Saturday.
Well, no, I have conversations about Idris
Mark
Elba.
Wahlberg as no, well apparently has got a cock with a hand at the end of it.
Who? Yeah, but in Boogie Nights, you know that was a prosthetic, right?
Yes, no, I know, but apparently...
He wasn't grappling with
it. No, I'm aware it was a prosthetic.
Where we started talking about dicks, it's time to wrap this up. Gord, it's very nice to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me back, dudes. I've missed you terribly.
You totally brought down the tenor of our conversation. But
that's what I'm here for.
That's what you're here for. And you'll be back next week.
Yes, barring death or disaster, I will be.
Oh,
well, that's what you said before, and then we thought you must
have
died.
And then some fucking disasters happened.
Hey, Gord, you know what?
Close enough.
Gord, it's been a whole 2 hours since you joined us.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
All right, very nice. Okay. Let's get into it. We've got a couple of things for you today. This week's brand new episode of Decrypto. Now, we got a lot of questions from people about cryptocurrencies, about why we decided to do this series. And I know a lot of people flash back to last year this time when it was all the rage. You could not move without someone telling you about their amazing investment in Bitcoin. Suddenly, when the price goes down to what it is, $4,449 at the moment, people are a little less enthusiastic. But that's not to say that it's gone away. It's not to say that the underlying technology around Bitcoin and around blockchain particularly is not going to be useful. And a lot of people are still very optimistic and bullish about it. Doesn't matter though. It's not to do with price. It's to do with what's new, and it's to do with how technology will allow us to transact and to deal with assets like never before. And when we got involved in pursuing the idea around a cryptocurrency idiot's guide, we were approached by Luno. So a couple of people have asked, who are Luno and what do they have to do with cryptocurrencies? Well, Marius Reitz from Luno got together with me to talk about their history, what they do, how they fit into the world of cryptocurrency. And don't forget, if you're interested in this and if you've been listening to the whole series, you might want to send us your questions because we're going to get the experts to tackle them in the final episode of the series. So we'll talk to all of our experts that we've spoken to over the course of the last few weeks, and you can send your questions to us contact@cliffcentral.com. Just put Decrypto in the subject and listen out for the answers in the final episode for next week. It's powered by Luno, Africa's first cryptocurrency platform, and that is coming up next. Also, a little later, our series with Fluxmans, where we get to know some of South Africa's leading attorneys, and we bring you the second episode in our new series, For the Love of Law, where we take you behind the desks of some of South Africa's smartest lawyers. For the Love of Law is brought to you by Fluxmans Attorneys, one of South Africa's leading law firms, and today we get to speak to Colin Strime, who's an expert in commercial and corporate-related litigation, insolvency laws, business restructure, and turnarounds. For more on this and any of our other series, go to cliffcentral.com, where you can find every episode that there is on all of these. And there's some great series that I haven't even mentioned today you might want to check out too. Never be stuck in the car on a long journey with boring nonsense ever again.
Never.
Thank you, Ben. Here's the un-news. The EFF are doing what they can to paint Pravin Gordhan as the biggest supporter of Jacob Zuma and white monopoly capital. This ironically perfectly describes Julius Malema and his friends, but if you're an EFF fan, the most important thing to remember is that he is a god who never lies and cares about your future ahead of his own wealth. Men with beards will be thrilled to know that you can now purchase Christmas lights purely for your beard. The other 99% of the male population, of course, will find this hugely embarrassing, perhaps even have a greater urge to punch people with beards in the face as a result. Stupid. Isn't that stupid?
As if we don't already have that urge.
And finally, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
It's just so that you can aim at night better for the beard.
Finally, the Cleveland Cavaliers have somewhat fallen apart since LeBron James left the team. The morale of the players is said to be an all-time low, and now they aren't winning. It's dawned on them that they actually live in Cleveland.
Which is a shithole.
We will see you tomorrow, bright and early. Stick around for Decrypto, stick around for our special series For the Love of Law, and plenty more on this Wednesday on cliffcentral.com.
Cliffcentral.com.